Good morning, everyone. Today is Thursday, September 20th, 2018. It is 9 a.m. and the County Administrative Workshop is assembled in the VCC Conference Rooms. President Commissioner Hare, Commissioner Morgan, Commissioner DeYoung. And first up is item 1A on Department Business is Juvenile Justice and Victims of Crime Act. FOCA Criminal Fine Account CFA Non-Competitive Grant Award.
You guys can come up.
I'm going to join the table. Enjoy our new chairs. Please fill out the ballot to see how you like those.
They're used.
Good morning. You're welcome to have a seat. It's a public meeting.
Oh, is it a public meeting?
Sure.
Not for comment. But
from the building.
What's that?
He says he's having me removed from the building.
Okay.
Because I came down here about a problem, you know, public records and stuff.
Sorry.
And he came running out of his office for no reason. I was speaking
Okay.
We are in a meeting, though, so if you need to continue with him.
So that you have to take up with him.
Okay. Well, he's in violation of the Eighth Amendment.
Okay.
All right, my bad. I'm sorry. So, dear sir.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
Commissioners.
All right, who's...
Tina's going to speak.
All right, Tina.
So, I'm not sure what the questions are for us, but I know that two of you are not really familiar with the Children's Advocacy Center.
And let's start from scratch so that the public is aware of what we're talking about. Assume we know nothing.
Okay. So the Children's Advocacy Center is actually under the umbrella of the Juvenile Justice Department. And what the Advocacy Center does is we are part of the investigation process of child abuse cases. Mm-hmm. And so 100% of all reported child abuse cases, those kids come to the center. They receive a forensic interview at the center. We have a doctor who does the forensic medical exam, and we keep the evidence at the center. We also advocate for those children throughout the process of the not only the investigation, but up to trial if necessary. And that's what we do.
Great.
So Tina has put together a little chart to show you. She conversed with all of the other advocacy centers in the state.
Well, there are 20 advocacy centers representing 36 counties.
Can I add just a tad to what Tina said, just to put it in context? So the advocacy center, as you folks know, it's over on 4th and D. And in the building, there's it's an interview room, and every single county has an interview room similar to ours. And there are video recorders and microphones in there. And in any case in which a child has been physically or sexually abused, the child has to go through like a forensic interview. Mm-hmm. And this is statewide. I imagine it's probably nationwide. This is how it's done, the industry standard. So in our center, the interview room is there. We have recording equipment. And so the child would be interviewed right there at the center. It's recorded, and then of course the copies of that interview become discovery in criminal cases, right? We got to give it to the defendant so like he knows what has been said, and then of course copies are given to myself and the attorneys who work with me so we can evaluate the case for strength of evidence. So all of that happens. The very foundation for any case of child physical or sexual abuse starts at the Children's Advocacy Center with that interview room. The physical location. If we were to interview children, like in, like the detective's room in the downstairs in the city PD or something, those interviews would potentially be subject to attack by some defense expert or something like that.
It would just third location.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. And it just would make the job much more difficult. You know, I mean, I'm getting off a little bit. I mean, the interview would still be admitted into evidence, but it would be more difficult to try and obtain justice for a child victim without having, you know, the physical location of the center.
Is this room set up to be welcoming to a youth, or is it a pretty sterile, like it used to be with a table and two chairs on one side? And
yeah, that was something I was going to add to what Ryan just explained so beautifully. The center is designed to be child-friendly. Prior to advocacy centers, kids were literally taken to police departments to be interviewed. So I've included a description on the 3 pages that I gave you of why these centers are so important, how we do what we do, and what would happen if we did not have centers. The services we provide are mandated by the state also. I don't know if you're aware of the history of our center, but we were the very first center in the state of Oregon. We were the pilot program for the state. And that was put together by Terry Soderbergh, who was the then juvenile director, who Lily, I think you know, and Judge Neufeld at the time. So what they did is Judge Neufeld sent a group of about 7 people down to Huntsville, Alabama, where it all started in the country to create these centers. And they came back and they put together the center here. At that time, we were there in a separate building across from the juvenile department over on 3rd Street. We were housed in that building for over about 20 years.
Family Solutions.
Yeah,
now,
almost 20 years. Yeah, Family Friends at the time had half of that building, and then the Advocacy Center had the other half. We moved into the building we're in now about 9 years ago. I think it's been about 9 years ago, maybe 10. It's not ideal by any stretch, but it does give us a neutral location, like we were speaking about earlier.
It's kind of, what's kind of nice about it, if, like right when the kids go in, I remember when I was handling these cases, so right when you walk in, there's a room much, you know, maybe 25% as large as the room we're currently in, and there's a little love seat couch, and then there's some little chairs for kids and some toys. And so the detective who was doing the interviews at the time, this is back before we had such a thing as a certified forensic interviewer or interviewer program, that didn't exist back then, but we would come in, you know, and the detective and I would meet the mom and dad, or you know, or the parent who brought the child in, and tell, you know, the little boy or girl like why they're there. And then the detective and the child walk across a hall that's a very short distance into the interview room. You know, we kind of let them play and get a little bit comfortable for a little while, you know, let them know that their mom or dad's going to be like right there, you know, within a few feet. And then the little kid would go into the interview room with the detective, and you know, we'd start up the recording equipment in Tina's office so that it could be, you know, documented.
Now this chart down here at the bottom, it says mm-hmm. observation room. Is that different from the interview room?
It is.
Okay.
Uh-huh. It's a separate room. Unfortunately, our observation room happens to be my office. And so the reason why we have an observation room is so a second detective or a DHS caseworker can observe, or a district attorney can observe the interview while it's taking place.
Is that the one-way glass thing I see on TV?
No, we've got cameras that feed into a hard drive.
Like to a monitor.
Uh-huh, okay. On a monitor, and so then they can watch it live. The importance of that is if there is a question that may have been missed by the interviewer, they can check in with the detective or the other person who's observing, and you know, cover that.
Now this slate of questions that you ask, is that boilerplate? Is that state mandated? In other words, sometimes there's questions you can't ask.
That's right.
Absolutely.
And so is this a list of questions of accepted qualified?
There are guidelines that were created by this state. Those guidelines were just put together, and hasn't been very long. It's
five
been about
years ago.
maybe 6 years ago. Oregon guidelines. There were interviewing guidelines prior to that, but they've really clamped down, and they've made sure that every center is following those guidelines. And so anyone who's conducting a child interview has to have gone through the training and met that requirement.
So for example, it's like you got to use open-ended questions and things like that. And it used to be, when I first started, a lot of times detectives would use like these very bland anatomical diagrams of like a child's body and like an adult's body, and they would ask the child, you know, like where did, you know, circle where you were touched, or circle the part of the adult's body that you touched or something like that. And as my understanding now, like, that's taboo now.
They've
decided
we didn't do that.
These days you don't do that anymore. So like, I say that or tell that story because it's like these guidelines for how you interview a child in an abuse case, it's like evolving and they're very strict. And there are like there's one professor, getting off a little bit, some guy who works for Reed College, he's a PhD and he considers himself to be an expert on memory. In my opinion, he is a hack, but he will come down and he'll attack a child's interview and claim that, you know, memories were implanted and all this garbage. I don't buy it, but there are people out there like that who do that, and that's why it's so important that the interview is done just right, or else, you know, you got to fight that in trial, and it can be a serious battle.
So, and that's where we are today, is that you've applied for a grant to actually provide for a three-quarter position for an interview, so it's not just falling on the backs of OSP and Grants Pass police detectives. So
Right. They'll
actually be an independent investigator outside of the scope of those law enforcement agencies doing the interviews?
So in my mind, and interrupt me if I say anything that you think is wrong, but it would be somebody who would just interviews. She mm-hmm. wouldn't talk to suspects. She wouldn't go out and correct forensic evidence or photograph crime scenes. He or she would only interview the children.
And it's not influenced by what else they know about a case. They're just interviewing neutrally.
Pursuant to those guidelines, yeah.
Interviewers generally don't know much about a case unless it's the detective doing the interview
prior
to actually conducting the interview.
A tricky thing is that the same detectives who are investigating all of the murders, all of the shootings, all the stabbings in our county, both in the city and outside, are also the same guys and women who need to interview these kids. And if you're an interviewer, you have requirements like where you peer review other people's interviews and document what was done right, what was done wrong, and then other people peer review your interviews. It's a time-consuming process, and in my opinion, these detectives who are working like you wouldn't believe, you know, investigating violence in our county, I just don't think that they have the resources available to really get up and get into the requirements of a certified forensic interviewer. So having one person who only had that focus would be the real value. So
this sounds to me like it's a very, very, it's an isolated, in other words, it should be all by itself.
Like a specialty.
It's a very specific
set of skills.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And the fallback would be if the defense attorney decided to look at this interview, that's a joke. The whole thing is thrown out, and justice is not served.
Correct.
So this is a very, very specialized field, it sounds like to me.
I'm so glad that you saw that, because we do have 9 detectives with OSP right now who have gone through the Oregon interview guidelines training, and they have conducted forensic interviews. But because these skills are so specific, you really have to do the work consistently to maintain that skill set.
Right. So let's bring this back. Let's not evaluate the merit between the people who are currently doing these interviews at 200 a year. Let's focus on the issue at hand. We have a grant application. Any discussion about one versus the other potentially undermines the validity of the people who have been doing these interviews for 8 years. I don't want to talk about that. What I want to talk about is the grant.
Well, I would argue that.
I don't think that's important for us to be arguing right now. Mm-hmm. You've got this grant, and it's mm-hmm. great. We want to support that. We don't want to evaluate the merits of it. What we need to do as a board is to evaluate your space allocation. Do you have enough space?
No.
Is this the wrong?
That's why
let's
we're
talk
here.
About the stuff that we can affect mm-hmm. here. Do you need match for this grant?
Well, it seemed to me we had something on. Didn't we have yesterday on consent was this interviewer, correct?
No. That was...
It was a job description.
It might have been from JJ, the job description.
Okay,
we're kind of
all right.
Cart
okay.
before the horse
right.
kind
we
of
We didn't
thing.
Approve the position, we approved the job description.
Correct. Because
yeah.
we were supposed to be here last week, but didn't realize
That's
it.
That's okay. There's some elements of context. And so what's relevant for us is if you need money to match this, let's try to find that. If you need space to accommodate this person who's going to need an office probably, mm-hmm. full-time, you know, space. Those are relevant issues for us to be evaluating. Not the questions, not the merit of who's better or worse. The grant's great. Let's support that and address those.
If I may say, I just would like to give Tina a little pat on the back, because this VOCA grant, she's been fighting for this grant for
Four and a half years. Like,
4.5 years.
I have not heard that this was a delta in our program. I didn't know that, or we potentially would have worked at this. This is significant. I mean, just the little interaction here, I had no idea that the fundamental foundation of what it is that you try to do in these things is predicated on the validity of what you're facilitating in your office, and it's so vital to this thing. I would have probably been inspired to go try to find some. $80,000 is not a delta I don't know that I couldn't have solved. So I apologize. That conversation is my fault, that I didn't reach out to your program and say, what is it that you need that I can help? I mean, that's my job. That's our job, is to find those things that we can affect change on, and that I'm not mining that for you. That's my fault, not yours. So if you need match, the 70, what I looked at other programs having a full-time FTE, your grant supports a 7.5 FTE,
right,
and cart before the horse, if we just approved a job description that only satisfies at a 0.75, and really, I think that we can find the delta for a full-time person, because it looks as though you have the need at 200 more than anybody else on your list here as a comparable, other than Douglas Cares.
Yeah,
that's significant, and we want to, I don't want to have a delta in this for people getting off because there's some sort of a foundational lack.
I would like to point out that the reason why we came up with the 0.75 is we tried to do the hourly rate as high as we possibly could. Having done that, we're still well below what the state average is paying for a forensic interviewer. Right. So we came up with, I think it was possibly 21. So we did have some interest in the job from another very experienced forensic interview from another part of the state. It was $10 an hour less than what they were making. So that's why we came up with 0.75, and it was like the best we could do given the amount we were being given by DOJ.
Not at all.
We're not done yet. This needs to, you're not ready to present necessarily to the board other than to approve for the grant. But this conversation needs to I need a foundational explanation. I need to go over, I need to look at the room. I need to have an understanding of what it is that you need.
Okay.
And maybe our shore up is not 0.25. It could be, I don't know, but it doesn't look like it's very comparable. And this, for me, is a pretty pivotal issue. I think Mr. Mulkins will agree with that. This has been a passion of mine. And I don't understand necessarily your program as well as I should. And that's probably my fault. So I think cumulatively we need to talk about this, because this is really important to our community, that we don't have anybody out there going unprocessed.
You're in here asking for a minimum, and we probably want to see the whole picture.
Well, tell me what you need, and we'll dial it back.
You know, that's the key. You know, when you're doing anything, you know, go for the whole thing and then say, you know, we can whittle it back to this if we have to. But, you know, it's a level of priorities and importance. And in my mind, this hits,
foundation
pushes the needle pretty far.
I can go big.
Well, you know, and you just mentioned that even at our best shot in the workforce, we're $10 below anybody else. Maybe we could throw in some fare tickets or something. You know,
you're one of the words. So forgive me. I don't want this to be too pointed, but I was a lobbyist in D.C. for 6 years. Advocacy is in the name of your association. No one else is going to do it. And I've told every program, Jim Goodwin included, you are advocating for your program. Let me decide between giving the DA money or juvenile money. You advocate for your program like nobody else is doing it in the whole world. And then we'll say, we hear what you're saying when you say you need 10 people. We're thinking we're with you at around 2. You know what I mean? So that's what Commissioner DeYoung, I think, was saying. Go for it. That's
make your program whole, and then we'll see how it works out.
So the only question I have is who signs the grants? There's a one amendment, there's a signature for a county representative, but in other places there's a financial officer. In another place, it's who's responsible for the grant. So the question of who's actually signing.
If we needed a motion to approve accepting this grant today and delegating the liaison and the finance director, if need be, to sign on the county's behalf, the board's behalf, I'd be fine with that.
Okay.
Is that what you need today?
Yes.
I think we just did that.
We need to get the job posted.
Yeah.
We've already lost somebody who, you know, would have been great.
Every delay in getting something processed that we put off a week of an interview or something like that, there's two people, and they're usually the good ones because they're getting hired somewhere else.
Yeah.
So sometimes I get a little anxious about getting our homework done and getting those interviews scheduled because I know the good person, they may not show up, and that's the one I wanted. So let's do it fast. We just
so you made a motion?
Did.
And I second that motion.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries 3-0.
Thank you so much.
So we'll work with Arthur and I to get
this carried away there in the beginning.
No, it's good stuff.
Listening to us. Yeah.
It's called passion.
This has been your wheelhouse for many years.
You're the one that gets to sit in and listen to these. I can't imagine. We had a presentation about child abuse and stuff one time. I thought, you've got to be kidding me, this is happening in a civilized society?
You guys need to sit in on those
crazy
weekly, monthly
reviews.
NDT,
yeah.
It will change your life.
Sat in them.
Okay, I figured you had. You'd been there.
Yeah, it's really something.
Commissioner DeYoung, I think that the DA will extend an invitation
absolutely
at what point it makes
please
sense.
Let me know and when it's convenient for you. We could do them twice a month.
We'll work it in, so no problem.
We'll go together if you'd like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you again.
Thank you.
We'll follow
thank
up.
You
really don't need to go more than once. Once for me was enough.
Well, you know, just
sobering.
Starting into this.
We have 15 minutes before we have a short meeting today.
I have nothing that I need to say.
I do.
I'm working so hard, but I don't need to tell you that.
You say that with a smile on your face. I think you need to practice, and we've got time if you need to step out in the hall.
Sober up a little bit and come forward again.
No, I'm
fine.
I think the progress on the audit, and we're all prepared for that. I wouldn't mind a quarterly review of all budgets at some point to just review where we're at. Specifically, we got an update from Parks and saying that they're 192 revenue-wise down from last year or the previous year or the expectation or what have you. I know that plays into, you know, what a projected ending fund balance is supposed to be, what the proposed projects might be for the year. I just think we need to be, that was the great superficial thing, but what are the numbers?
Well, also their obligation, you know, because, you know, our obligation is a match for the $1.4 million or whatever that's going to take out there.
Yeah, and discerning, you know, that match should be coming from the property sale reserve, the capital reserve, and not out of her operations.
Yeah.
But there are things she was telling us that she was spending on park projects that didn't qualify as a match, that she's made the decision, which I support, of doing it out of her operations budget, so to speak, for small capital things that she's not going to get a
repairs
grant
and maintenance.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Fix the water line at Indian Mary or whatever. Yeah.
So I was made aware that we are a grant recipient that needs a signer when that process comes. And I know that they're going to be working with you, but I'd like to make a motion that we delegate this grant to the chair to sign on behalf of the board's
Why don't we just
behalf
do a standing policy? I have a recommendation for one as well, that those grant opportunities, when they come in, are the responsibility of, honestly, the first step is the liaison. As I would say.
In my case, I was saying
I don't
he's
know what's going
okay
on with the CAC. Yep. That should be your wheelhouse.
Yep.
And the same thing if one comes into the parks or one comes into the fair, so that we're not holding up the system. When we actually take possession of the grant and or appropriate the money, that comes to the full board and every box is checked and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes through a public process. But just accepting it in the first place doesn't obligate us to anything. And I would say that we could just do that.
I'd support that policy that the liaison can sign on behalf.
The second one that I had a recommendation for, and I thought we had done this, but all evidence to the contrary based on yesterday's two job descriptions that were presented on the consent calendar. Job descriptions are not something of countywide concern. They're mm-hmm. internal administrative. And so I have no objection to, at the admin meeting, or even general discussion, not to hold up the process for approving, evaluating and approving job descriptions right here.
They I agree.
Don't need to go to the week before the session.
I will make that part of a policy
In 8 years,
change.
I don't know that I've ever heard a comment on a job description. So 400 meetings, several thousand comments in public, at 3 minutes apiece, not one of them was concerning a job description.
No.
Salaries is a different thing, and salaries is not necessarily the end-all be-all component of the job description, because if we haven't hired somebody yet, that negotiation process happens after the interview, so it's not even that part.
Not even there, yeah.
No.
Okay.
I think those are good things, and I did talk to JJ about the job description thing, and he was fine with it. He thought it was fairly cumbersome. He sat over there for
a while.
Yeah.
Longer than he could have, should have, would have, but that'd be great. Cool.
Okay, anything else for Arthur Diarz? Do you have anything else for us today?
Are we all in agreement on those two policy options?
Yes.
Okay.
I think so.
Yes. I think they're good stuff.
Yeah, I agree.
Both through the accepting a grant and the approval of a job description.
Initial acceptance of a grant.
Initial acceptance of a grant, correct.
Okay. We'll see how that goes. Don't accept anything. That's like a 90% match. And.
But it's like you said.
We will wear togas on Friday. Just.
But it's like you said, though, when the actual official paperwork comes, it still needs to come to the full board. But
yes.
We're saying these initial steps to keep the process moving forward. Yeah, I agree.
Great. And I was thinking there is, in our conversations, I wasn't just throwing this out there that I thought that we had resources. And I know Commissioner Morgan has justified and valid concerns about over-appropriating of the Forest Trust. My benchmark, and I think kind of what the board had been discussing, was $1 million a year appropriations. Because we have about, we're going to have 5 years of that funding probably.
Right, for that margin there.
For that margin, for 5 years already.
Mm-hmm.
And good or bad, how it came about. I believe it's sustainable for a while. I bet it's sustainable for probably 10 years. And hopefully within the next 10 years, we acquire this 8,000 acres of state land, which changes the trajectory tremendously and probably puts us at a sustained yield amount of $2 million, because mm-hmm. that is productive ground at a very need-to-harvest level on the ARC. If you look at those age stand classifications, those, I just got that tutorial up at ODF meeting last month, or this like, the last couple of weeks. Great section of the portfolio. If we added that in, it would be huge. So
what's
what
our
I was thinking,
on that? I mean, where is that?
I'm going to lean, well, I'm going to be. I was thinking this next legislative session, you two need to lean into that effort. I think it's plowable ground with the nexus of coming together with the legitimate outcome of the state losing their third battle on the state forest trust lands. The state legislature is going to be very interested in reducing their booked liability of $1.4 million on their bonding capacity. So if they can shave mm-hmm. that off a little bit, mm-hmm. I think there's going to be a real legislative push to say, don't worry about it. We got a solution forever. You'll never have this problem again. Because if you don't settle it like this, we're going to be suing you in 5 to 10 years again because you don't do what you're
Wait,
supposed
so,
to
yep.
do. So I think the argument is roundable.
Do we have a legislator carrying the water on that?
David Brocksmith is taking up that charge.
Yeah.
So I feel very confident that he can reach across the aisle. And
he's got more success in that area.
Yeah. So it's a good fix. And so I'm thinking that if we've appropriated 680 plus 200, there's still about mm-hmm. $120,000 left. And I can't think of a better cause than this
making it a full-time, covering the match.
See what they need, but
and
that's where
and making
I would
sure that we're at a comparative level that we can actually hire.
Especially with our number being right around 200.
And this isn't just a comparable of our comparisons. This is a statewide need, and therefore should be statewide.
What I want to know is this is one element of what they do.
Yeah.
What else do they do that they're not keeping up with the workload. I don't even care about the Joneses. Mm-hmm. Tell me what you need to do, what the resources need to be to accomplish your outcomes.
For us here.
And then we'll properly assess it. I don't. The Joneses is one thing, but it's not the end-all, be-all comparator. So
okay.
That's where I would say that we could go. And I don't like to make blind promises, but that's what I was right. That's what I was thinking in my back of my mind.
And we've got that margin, and it fits within the
existing juvenile. It's already
program.
There.
Yeah,
it's not going outside of the mark.
And that's why we said juvenile justice. It's covered.
Good job, Morgan.
Okay. Anything else from the chief financial officer?
Nope.
Or the chief?
Hey, don't
the
wait a second.
Director,
we just blew our
financial
that
director.
Cost. Jeez.
I just got a raise.
One acronym, okay. Three letters, and the next thing you know.
That's it. Everything.
Okay.
By the way, you're fired as CFO and hired as. Finance director.
Good while it lasts.
And don't write.
As long as you're sitting in those chairs, you're our CFO. The second you walk out the door, you're just a finance director.
You'll strut across the hallway and then read this.
Wait, mechanical office.
For a minute, he'll be bumped up in the chest and then he'll see the sign on his office. Oh, I guess I can go back to work.
Maintenance.
He doesn't move from that office. It's just a squirrel wheel.
Yeah, he does. Okay.
All righty.
Item number three, other business? Anything that you
not
have?
Today. I think we need to prepare for our
10 o'clock.
Day.
It's 10:30 is what it is, but we need to be.
Oh, there. It's not a 10 o'clock meeting?
10:30 is
the
AOC?
Yeah, I'm sorry. When I was looking at my calendar this morning, it looked like it was right back to back. My apologies. Yeah, you're right. It's 10:30.
Yeah. Okay, board business is 4A, resolution number 2018-053 in the matter of appointment to the Board of Property Tax Appeals.
So the BOPTA committee is, these are the standing members that desire to continue meeting the needs. They've gone through the training, and she recommends
the
training
is pretty extensive. I did that. I've done it I wouldn't say I've completed it. I've
started it
several times. And it's really important to have people with a pretty relevant background to process these. The state's taxing process is very complex, and I encourage anybody who wants to learn about it to go to the Deschutes website and take a look at, there's about a 15-minute video. That really goes through as basic of an explanation in a complicated system as can be of how our state taxing system works. I know that when people move into a neighborhood and for new and they've done something or whatever, they're often taken aback by their taxes or X, and their neighbors who's got the same basic house, totally different taxes.
Talk over the fence.
Crazy.
Did you find that one person allows the assessor to come on board and the other one doesn't? I had a house up on Beverly Drive and the tax assessor showed up and I said, "So you're here, what are you here for?" And we were standing in the street, so he had no idea that I was even a resident. And he says, "We have to assess these from time to time." And he said, "That house right there was a brand new house, and the contractor would not let us go in to see it. So therefore, right now, we have it listed that it has we see the chimney, so it's got a heat-elator fireplace, the garage is sheetrock, all of the above." And I said, "Well, that's my house, why don't we go in and take a look?" So we went in and took a look, and he says, "Well, I have it down here that you have a heating system and everything." And he looked right at the thermostat and he says, "Do you still have baseboard heaters?" I said, "Yes, sir," because I did. I still had baseboard heaters. So he checked off, didn't have a highfalutin state-of-the-art heating system. It had baseboard heaters. He said, "That isn't a heat-elator fireplace." I said, "No, it isn't." And he put it down, it was just all show, no go. We went out in the garage, it was not sheetrocked, it was a non-finished garage. He had to check all those things off that he had to assume because the contractor would not let him in there.
Well, he did a curbside assessment is what they call it.
Yeah, is that what it is, yeah. And when he got done checking off, my taxes went down. My assessment went down because now he knew what was actually there. Now if I applied for a permit to put a heating system in, you bet that's probably gonna trigger it, but rightfully so. Your assessed value goes up and everything else goes up with it. But it was an interesting exercise for people to scream and holler, "Oh, I'm never going to let him in here because, boy, he'll write me up." No, it's probably already written up, and you didn't, and you
well,
have a chance to explain that.
anything and everything from every vantage point except getting on the property. So they can look at Google Earth and say, and they don't care about whether or not anything's permitted or not. That doesn't matter. It's the value is what they're assessing. And if they look at, you know, the roof of a barn and it's really nice because you just re-roofed it last year, it doesn't matter if the other thing's fallen apart. They're going to say, wow, I couldn't see that, but that's probably what it's worth. And then you have to come and argue against it.
Yeah, is that what pictures. This is?
Last year there wasn't very many, but the year before there were 80 people who appealed their taxes.
It doesn't say anywhere in here. Is this an annual thing? Do you
every
pick a
year,
new board every year?
Every year.
Okay.
Every year everybody's up.
Are any of these repetitious?
A multi-year. All of them have been appointed for multiple years.
Okay.
I would say that they're in good standing. They've done a good job. I witnessed it last year, and so somebody else will witness this again. It takes place in May, April, somewhere around there, in the spring. So I think it's in the spring. Maybe it's in the fall, because it would make sense that it kept happening.
Have
right
you been on this before, Commissioner?
I got assigned to, but I wasn't called upon for this. I wasn't needed as the alternate.
Okay, so
I got to follow up with her when it is.
Are you still an alternate? It says here represents little members from the county governing body. Is that considered an alternate position?
Yes.
You get called in if the three
somebody
don't...
can't be there. You have to have a minimum number.
Okay, you have to have three people. Okay.
So.
Good. Thank you for...
Yeah, it's a good thing. I mean, that's the beauty of our system is there's appeals for just about everything.
Yeah.
Maybe everything.
Okay.
I was thinking of one yesterday I came across. But
so
it wasn't
we're in agreement on item 4A.
Yeah, do you guys want to talk about...
So what do we do? Move this consent, I guess?
Yeah.
And then name those people at consent? Okay. And B is Chamber of Commerce to rent the ambassador for candidate forum.
Do we always approve these? Or do they normally just have staff approval?
Are they just asking for a waiver?
Yeah.
That's why.
Oh, there's a waiver request? Okay, I didn't see that on the application.
I didn't either. I haven't read it yet, but I'm sure that's why it's here. Unless somebody objects, then it can be brought here.
Got it.
Otherwise, when they are asking for a waiver of the fee.
I have to ask, Chamber of Commerce is the applicant, but usually when we have these candidate forums, it's Chamber of Commerce and Daily Courier.
Right.
So is the Daily Courier involved in this? I know the Chamber is the applicant.
All I know is what the application says. The primary... the Courier was not involved. They didn't find it relevant.
The
Chamber did it on their own. So,
so
I don't
this
know
could
about
be that the Chamber's
general.
Doing it on their own again.
Right. I didn't go, but that's what I heard.
I didn't go either.
They do want it televised, too. So.
They want it televised.
So that takes staff time, which waiving the fee, and then we have staff time, that's costing.
Members of the Chamber.
That's true.
You guys have to live with this outcome, so you guys decide.
I'm okay with it. I think it's a benefit to the public to have it televised.
I think you're right. If we
so you're the liaison to the Chamber. What's your recommendation? What do you think we ought to do?
I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
So okay with it at giving it to them or at $75 an hour?
Well, we've televised things of general interest. That doesn't mean that we always do it for free. So
the televising I'm okay with. As far as the
waiving the fee.
I don't have a preference on that. How often do we have a policy on this? How often do we consider that? How often are we asked?
It's just up to you guys.
These do this every year.
Typically waive the fee.
Then I'd say we stick with what we typically do.
So you want to waive the fee for the ambassador?
Yes, okay. For this event.
So I would suggest that in the future that you waive the fee for those interests that are not for profit. But if the Courier were to be a partner in this, they are a for-profit agency, and
they can
they
pay the fee.
Not be given those kind of provisions.
Though with that recommendation, though, there is a specific already
for a rate.
That's lower for nonprofits, so it's still as considered.
Are we a member? Is Josephson County a member of the Chamber?
We
yes.
are. Our dues are about $500. That's maybe a fee. they're really low. Ivy's is 500.
For the whole county.
GP's is like 3,000.
Yeah.
And then every 3 years we do 3,000 for the BR&E study, which is a joint venture between the chamber and SBD. See.
Well, we'd be kind of charging ourselves in a way, because we're a pretty substantial member of the chamber.
They're looking at the fees, probably $150, $75.
Well, it's $75 an hour to our minimum, so it's a buck and a half.
That's what I said.
Yeah. The regular fee is $150 an hour with a 2 hour minimum.
I didn't see the 2 hour minimum. It's not just a flat rate.
It's 2 hour minimum.
That makes sense. Hey, that's why I pay him the big bucks.
You actually cost us more than, because you're a PERS.
Didn't ask to be.
I know. You could elect not to.
But they did not give me that option.
You're an elected. You have, of course.
And then they need an audio system.
I would advise you against that.
They need an audio system for $25, so it would be $175 total if we're going to charge them. They check the box, nonprofit, political parties, and government, but I guess this is what their application is.
Are they asking for a waiver on the application?
This gal is New Jersey, so Colleen came in with her and said, usually we waive it, and she said, you know, we can start a new policy, we can start charging.
Colleen.
So it's like setting the standard right now.
So did Colleen tell her that, I got to just go in and ask them to waive it?
Probably.
Well, and if that's what we've done every year.
If that's what we've done, then I think, Josie, we can't,
I don't know. I mean, I met her, but that's it. I don't know. I could be the bad guy.
She was at my meeting yesterday with Commissioner Cameron from Marion County.
She was at the water park.
Dedication, yeah.
That's where I met her. She seems nice. I think the chamber is a partner.
She actually presented to us on Monday at the joint city-county meeting that went 5 hours.
You know what you could do is you could assess the economic development fund, because it's chamber-related, or the cost of that. I'm sure Julie would really love that. But
anyway, so we have consensus here that we're going to...
giving you options, because that's what I...
Do I hear a motion to waive the fee?
Just general consensus that the fee could be waived.
I'm in agreement with that. Commissioner Morgan?
Well, since you both said yes, I'm going to say no.
Oh, come on.
Just kidding.
You said
I'm going
yes
to hold
first.
Out next time just to watch it squirm over
we
there.
We did. She said it already.
Oh, yeah.
She's on the record.
And she's getting good at it. That's what makes you mad.
Man.
She's starting to get good at it. Manipulative.
No.
What you should do is you should explore every side so they have no idea where you're going to land.
Yeah.
That used to drive Cheryl and Keith crazy.
Yeah.
Just tell us what you want to do.
See, well, I don't
like
know.
I have to tell you every possible option.
Well, I just don't know. Okay, so we got that put aside. Chamber, so we're at to see matters from commissioners.
I think I want to sue on the smart meter deal, and I want to try to implement a stay, but...
Did you read the...
I think based on the 7th Court, or the 7th District... saying that it's a violation of the Fourth Amendment, there might be standing on that.
Wendy got hers yesterday.
This is what I hear.
I didn't know.
And I'm fine. Slept just fine.
You do have a certain glow.
The group, yeah. Yeah. But she started out this morning, her hair was straight. And then, hey. All you gotta do is stand by your smart meter and you get a perm. It's not good for business in town here. But anyway, I read their resolution. Is it that what it was?
Mm-hmm.
It kind of was repetitious in a few spots, and I don't know where we'd have to go look up every one of them.
Resolutions mean nothing.
But can we put a moratorium on it until we get more information?
No.
We don't have that authority. It'd have to be a stay of the courts.
Yep. We would file for an injunction or something.
And I think that's the option that all citizens have as well, but
it would seem like it.
Mm-hmm.
But it would only apply to them.
Correct. It would have
wouldn't
to be a class
to the
action.
The individual wouldn't apply to the county.
But being asked to do it on behalf of all of our citizens is another thing.
It would be interesting to find out whether or not we have standing, you know, to represent them in that case. But I would say that we do. looking at all the other cases that we could file.
Should we check with Wally along that line to say?
I asked him yesterday to look into it, so he should be doing that. The problem is that I see them already deploying them, and they're going to be.
Including have deployed them to some people that have opted out, and they still deployed them.
And they're not having their public hearing until the 24th or 25th.
Oh, no, they had their public hearings in Salem or Portland last
year. Yeah, but Salem
or
Portland, that's
just
not
a town hall.
This is
Let
a town hall.
Let me tell you what we did. And while you guys are all standing here, we're going out to your guys' place.
Yeah.
Well, it would be something we have to act upon quickly, so hopefully Wally will have a response sooner than later.
What I find interesting is I put up no trespassing signs at the ranch, and they're still keeping checking the meter. That's a binding thing.
They have a pickup thing. You don't have to really go. I see them come by my house, and
my driveway's a mile long. There's no clicker thing.
They walk onto my property, go through my closed gates, walk into my backyard to get to my meter.
And I bet there's
which they can do if you don't have a no trespassing sign.
I bet there's the clause in there that says they can do it anyway because they're a public utility.
I don't think so. Our assessors can't go on, our tax collector. A sheriff's office can't go on to your property without probable cause.
That's true.
I don't see how a power company gets around it. But it is interesting, like, you don't own the meter. The meter's theirs.
I could call my son. He used to be a meter reader, see what their policy is.
They could try to climb a ladder to get over my back fence to read it with a telescope. But
And your
I liked the idea
highly
of
trained guard dog
would attack.
Peanut butter
like
and guard dog.
Sending a picture. And then once a year, you
that was
there.
I don't think
absolutely.
That.
If they used to allow postcards, why could they not? I mean, seriously, that was a very valid point. Here's a snapshot.
Have an app.
Bank can do it.
Yeah.
With
create
check.
An app.
Exactly.
Create an app and just it would.
And every check has got bears on it, and different background.
Well,
and
the one
that
stood out to me is you have co-located meters, and they're charging you $36 a piece. There's no extra travel time or collection cost.
No, but it's over company-wide. That's why I was my suggestion to have a transformer with a meter farm on it. That transformer only feeds 6 homes. So put 6 meter bases on there.
Yeah, but that's expensive to go convert.
Not really.
Change all of
those
meter
locations. I mean, from now
locations.
On out. No,
yeah.
From now on out. You have a new subdivision.
Why don't they?
We're going to do that on a subdivision with a meter.
Absolutely.
Then you can have, you don't have a meter at your home. It's out there on the
transformer
itself. The wire size is the same from the transformer to your meter base as it is from the meter base at the transformer to your power panel.
Sure.
And you don't have to put a meter base on the side of your house. It's out at the street.
Right.
It actually cuts back on your, you know, they plug into, you run the wire over to the thing and that's it.
I know they're going to probably listen to this meeting, but there is nothing motivating an investor-owned utility. I worked with them for years in D.C. There's one thing, money. It's
all money. You're right, absolutely right.
They're stockholders. You know, Berkshire Hathaway owns specific power, and that's what they're beholden to.
How is it a public utility that's privately owned?
It's the same thing that
but it's not a
franchise.
Yeah.
You know, it's very similar, mm-hmm. regulated to that.
But it's regulated, so.
Well, so
to an extent.
Yeah.
Anything else under the matter?
It just seems like the PUC is just a rubber stamp, though. They would negotiate that monthly rate down or the do away with the opt-out fee initially. Why do you have to have a fee to just opt out? I can see the monthly rate.
Why?
Okay. I heard they dropped one of the fees, but they're now charging for installation of the meters and charging for the. It's interesting. Some of the bills have been interesting that we're seeing.
Yeah.
I have a matter that I was asked to ask you guys for feedback. October 10th is a Wednesday. They're doing the Josephine County College Career Fair. So they bring in all the students from North Valley, Hidden Valley, Illinois Valley, Logos, and Rover High Schools, all to Grants Pass High School, and they do a college career fair that day. They are going to have a couple bigger settings in the PAC Center, with a Performing Arts Center, and they're looking for someone who would be willing to be a speaker for about a 40-minute interaction with the kids, talking about a presentation on what our government does and how kids can get involved now, as well as career pathways for future, and good ways to engage
And it's either from 10:30 to 11:10 or 11:15 to 11:55, but they're looking for someone who would be a dynamic presenter. And I will be on a plane.
I'm not the person to go over there and talk to them about college.
Government jobs. You're representing what you can do in government, what kind of jobs are available for you. They're doing a college career path. It's not just about college, but government is a path. So, for instance, they have different programs at RCC that are technical or trade, and we're hiring out of our public works. We were hiring at the water plant for those until they dropped the program, or they, you know, different programs that, okay, I'll bring up Rogue Truck Body. One of my former probationers went through that welding program at RCC, and he had a job before he even had a certificate finished. And
doing really well out there.
Absolutely. And Rogue Truck Body was one of the presenters yesterday at the Rogue Workforce, or the Second Chance Tour.
You said that's October?
October 10th. In the morning.
I don't think I'm here. What I was going to suggest before I figure that out.
HR.
Well, no, I was actually going to suggest the entire board. One time, when I've done similar things, it gets fairly sterile for one person to be presenting for 45 minutes. The exchange back and forth between three people that offer different perspectives.
Oh, yeah.
You went to college, you didn't, but I still got here. There's different paths. Don't subscribe to this one path fits all kind of an idea. I think you both could present that really well. I'm not recommending that just because I can't make it. I think it's a great thing to always do in partnership if possible, because you guys offer different perspectives.
Well, and if we can't be the ones to go, because I also am not in town that day, asking for a recommendation of who would be the right person to go and who would be the one that can talk about career pathways and different options. You can talk about Southern Oregon Air Academy as an opportunity for them to get education and a career pathway to piloting or other aeronautical pathways. Or we can find a staff member that you think would be a dynamic presenter that can talk about this and represent appropriately.
I wouldn't mind if we put it out to the managers and said, we need four, like Sarah from Parks, and maybe even Larry Graves, HR manager JJ.
I think Larry Graves.
JJ is usually invited and takes part in some of those interviews and stuff like that, so they're familiar with him. But as far as dynamic presenter, Graves. Sarah is very passionate.
Sarah is passionate. Larry Graves is passionate. You've already painted me into the corner. Why don't you hand me the brush so I can finish it off?
No, I'm just seeing if I was listening to you. You were giving ideas.
I don't think we should presuppose. You know, there could be managers who feel, I want to do this.
Yeah, I think.
Don't put me out because you don't see me as a dynamic.
Is Caleb LaPlante going to be one of the presenters?
I don't know. They have a huge pool they pull from.
Okay. Well, I think it would be. It'd be time well spent.
Is it
on the weekend or what?
Or is it the city? The 10th is a Wednesday.
Wednesday morning.
Can we partner with the city anyway?
Yeah, let's.
She's looking for anyone we would recommend.
You know,
do you know who she should ask?
Another
to do the
person
presentation
that would be really that really speaks well, and it would be good for the city, be Aaron Kubik. In the government side, I'd team up with Aaron Kubik on the government side. We have out.
I think you could have four or five people.
Four or five people as a panel.
As a panel.
Yeah.
One person gets really sterile really fast.
Yeah. Rob Brandis from Public Works.
Yeah, he could be good.
It always boggles my mind why Public Works is as broad of a deal with the water department, sewage department, you name it. Those are skilled jobs. But nobody ever says, hey, I want to work in the water department. But you know what? If you got down there and if you were halfway mechanically inclined and said, gosh, I love working on pipes and tracing out pumps and this and that and the other thing, gosh, you'd be surprised. It's exposure. I think it's exposure every time, what you're exposed to. I don't know if we give tours of our water plants to students or of our treatment facilities to students.
You know, it's interesting that they go on these long field trips someplace else and there's things to see right here in River City.
And, you know, on top of that, it's, you know, you've got, so there's such an environmental push, and what, if you explain to the kids what we have to do to stormwater.
So I kind of threw some of those ideas out at Shauna Bland, who's the career development coordinator at Grants West High School, and I'll see what she gets back as far as wanting to do. Yeah. And I threw out Aaron Kubik and you. I threw out Rob, Sarah, Larry, as far as maybe a panelist would be more interesting. So we'll see what she says. And
maybe, you know, myself and one other from the county and Aaron and one other from the city. And that might be good. Even the mayor would be good to throw in there.
I will see what she says. I threw out some options. So.
Okay. All right. We pretty well got that one. I agree with that. What I would like to do, and the more I think about it, I think now is the time to do it. I think we should be collectively, and I don't know if we do it with, you know, maybe bring it up to today's meeting for District 4. We need to petition 60 Minutes to do a documentary and segment on Northwest Wildfire and the impact it's had. And go back 40 years and say this was the Calmeopsis back then, and we agreed to preserve that for the citizens of the United States of America and put it into a national, what do you call that? Reserve.
Wilderness area.
A wilderness area. And we did that.
But have you heard what they're saying is the cause of these fires?
I don't care what they're saying. Pictures are a million words. And that's them.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk to them. I want, if we're not going to get anywhere, and I said it the other night when we were with Evan, is that we continually talk to Merkley and Wyden. Merkley and Wyden aren't the senators we need to talk to. We need to talk to the other 48 senators and tell them what our problem is here. They're not getting the truth from Merkley and Wyden. We have a documentary on 60 Minutes, and guess what? Now that hit everybody on the East Coast, well, what do you mean? I thought we were, you haven't been preserving it? Yes, we tried. And catastrophic wildfire, because we can't take care of the forest, we can't manage the forest. Why did you want us to preserve that in the first place? Because of its beauty, and you wanted your grandkids to come to? Well, who took care of it 100 years prior to you thinking it was beautiful? The timber industry and the people of the Pacific Northwest kept that beautiful for you. You wanted to keep it, and the reason you wanted to keep it was to just stop logging. And that was your idea, and that isn't happening.
Yeah, the Calmeopsis Wilderness Area has been designated prior to the uplisting of the Northern Spotted Owl. Okay. It was the removal of the road system that happened.
Well, that's all part of.
So it's not really the timber industry that was the steward of it. It was the U.S. Forest Service.
It was the U.S. Forest Service. But that's where you get that message out.
It was different back then. That there wasn't a no-touch element to wilderness designations or areas. I shouldn't say wilderness designation. It's the preservation concept didn't say no-touch historically for the last 100 years.
Right.
It was a managed touch. It was appropriate provisions that
and we did a fantastic job of it up until when we were allowed to do the job up until 40 years ago when we were allowed to not touch it and all that ended. And 40 years later, this is what we have. We have fires in Crater Lake National Forest, in the Crater Lake National Park. That go up there and have pictures of the burnout lodge poles along going to Bend.
Yeah.
But those visuals, this is what happened to it.
The concept is good, Commissioner DeYoung. It's really important, the words that we choose.
Sure.
To explain this are...
But that we would get 20 minutes, because you get a 20-minute segment.
Yeah.
And what a message. And now you're taking it to people in Alabama.
Right.
You're taking it to people in Florida. And you're taking it and they're saying, gee,
you can't
come out here and see it anymore,
like,
because it's ruined.
The extreme conservationists, environmentalists, they're changing their dialogue, but they're the same people who told you to do this, and now they're saying these are the reasons why it's happening. It's so funny how they just move around, you know, take all of the wood out of the streams. Oh no, put it back in.
Put
back these huge logs.
Marketable too.
They're not reflective of the riparian area that has ever been in that area.
Nope.
And it's just,
nope.
It's so asinine that they just subscribe to one element as opposed to the holistic, you know, integrity. not just removing people.
But we're not
people,
getting our message. We're trying to get our message to the people. We're talking to government, and government's not listening. They haven't listened for 40 years.
No,
so now talk to the people.
Yeah.
And let the people talk to the government. See just how damn ridiculous this thing is. We just keep throwing our money at it, and we keep doing this. Why not get a collective thing for maybe it has to be District 4 that says we're all going to write a letter to 60 Minutes. The governor can chime in. Boy, I was down there. I saw it.
Yep.
This is how many. You can go to the governor. How much did catastrophic wildfire cost in Oregon this year? It cost the people of the United States of America $360 million to fight a fire.
I would say, yeah, at least.
Well, what are you
now
thinking?
Combine that with
and
the
then,
Delta fire,
you,
the Carr fire, the Miles
then,
fire, the and it's
you can
billions.
Go on and on and on. But
billions.
Then you go and say, could this any of this been prevented? You bet. By
well, let's
and,
have
and
that conversation.
And then you can have that. I didn't know if I should bring that up today under
yes.
Do they have a matter? Is it?
They will.
Do you know if Jackson County's coming?
Yes.
Good.
I think they are.
I'm glad to hear.
So that's the thing.
Yeah, half an hour.
I just want to throw that out there because you know what? These companies like 60 Minutes and Dateline and all that, they are just itching for stories. And this one is highly controversial. I bet they'd do it.
Sounds good.
Okay, we got to get going here. It is 10:01. We're adjourned at 10:01. Thank you, everyone.